The Blitz. KFNC Mont Bellevue, Houston. A Gau Media station. If you're not down with that, we got two words for you.
Are you ready? Hey, think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down!
Live from the Gau Studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com.
AGE, factory approved warehouse outlet.
Here's Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Hour number two, 713-780. ESPN 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on The Blitz Facebook page. Find The Blitz, click like, you're good to go. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at AJ is the real, at Jongi Football, at Degenerates 975. You could also text the show at 713-780-3776. And if you missed any of our number one, all available on podcastarena.com. Also available on that great new app we have, the ESPN 975 app. It has everything. All the shows, all the podcasts. Check it out. A lot of stuff that we talked about in the first hour, mostly related to the games. Getting a lot of, y'all are just a bunch of old men complaining about the celebrations. And I
that's fine.
Yeah, I kind of thought we were defending the celebration, frankly.
I just don't like when losers celebrate. I like when winners celebrate. I'm not an old man. I just think when your team sucks, you shouldn't celebrate anything except winning games.
I think, in truth, I it doesn't bother me that much, except for, you know, I think you ought to be consistent with it. If you're going to rip Cam for it, you ought to be ripping J.J. Watt for it. And it's not just the sacks. He does a little finger wag when he tips a pass.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's obnoxious.
And to me, it's context of the game, man. If you're down 17 points and doing that crap and celebrating a sack, that's what I object to. Because the bottom line is, your sack should be helping you win. And when Cam Newton's celebrating a first down that gets a key first down that's going to help them get to the Super Bowl, I'm okay with that. But a sack when you're down by 20, and I don't remember which game it was, whether it was the Falcons or the Dolphins, and I think it might have been the Dolphins game when they were completely down and he wound up getting a cheap sack and he's doing his J.J. Watt thing. It's like, come on, man. Anyway. And if that makes me old, so be it. I'm not saying guys shouldn't do it. They should have fun. Just have fun when you're not sucking. Let's try Mac. What's up, Mac?
Sports, Jets.
Sports to you.
I'm gonna agree with AJ, and I'm gonna agree with Fred. I'm gonna say both you guys are absolutely right. I went to school at Ole Miss and played sports there. I played baseball there, but it was a long time ago. One of the things, I was watching the Ole Miss LSU game, and Vern Lundquist, LSU threw a touchdown pass when Ole Miss was up. I believe it was 17-0 at the time. And the kid went in and did the whole Superman shirt rip. And it was one of the first times I'd ever heard a commentator say, he goes, "Young man, I think you need to look at the scoreboard." Wow. And I was, but the fact that if you're going to celebrate when you're doing something good, like you guys have just said. Celebrate when you're doing something good for your team. I get sacking somebody, but when you're down 21 points and you sit there and do the throat cut mechanism, it's like you're getting beat.
Yeah, that's the only point I was trying to make, was just if you're losing, that's not you're part of the reason you're losing. So now you're going to celebrate your individual accomplishments?
Yeah.
That's all. Ryan says, I say bring back team celebrations, hashtag Dirty Bird. I liked some of those. I thought they were fun that they took. I loved when, who was it? Was it Joe Horn that took the phone out of the?
Yep.
Yeah, I love that. I thought that was cool. As long as it's creative. I mean, but
I liked when Kuechly scored the touchdown yesterday and that fan flopped out of the stands, and which was clearly a premeditated prop for a group celebration was that fan, and he like instead of his actual celebration, he went over and had to like check on the dude who flopped out of the stand. That was the best.
See, like, but I do think there's some cool thing. Like, I think it's cool that they go and give the touchdown footballs to little kids. I like that.
I don't.
Well, you don't like little kids.
No.
Joshua says it really well. It's about players celebrating personal achievements more than team achievement. That's what I object to. I'm all fine with it if you're winning, if it's a big game, and you're making a play that's helping your team win. Not if you're making a play in a game where you're getting your ass kicked and you're part of the reason for it. Try Jared. What's up, Jared?
Sports
to you.
Yeah, my question was the way that Wade Phillips' defense that he put out there when he rushed 4, dropped 7, and then rushed 3 and dropped 8. Do you think that other teams are going to simulate that same style of defense that they played against Brady? And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, one thing I will say is most teams don't have a Von Miller or a Derek Wolf or a DeMarcus Ware, much less all three of those guys. I mean, if you have someone, I'm sure there are teams. I think of teams like the Chiefs who have a dominant pass rusher. I could see them doing that, but I've seen them do that at some points during the season. You know, it's just that they were able to get to Brady, and I assume that over the offseason the Patriots' top priority is going to be settling their offensive line. Like,
can we say that? Yeah. Well, last year kind of got masked because they won a Super Bowl, but there were times last year where they had some of the same issues. And
well, this time it cost them.
Not having Nate Solder is a big loss for them, and obviously because that's a guy who's one of the better tackles in the league. But yeah, that's something they've got to fix.
And they need to have some depth there.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't think that team is all that far away. I think if they had, and again, they might have masked it if they managed to get out of there with a win yesterday. All right, we'll try one more call, Jeff, and then we're going to move on to some other things. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, sports, Jeff.
Okay. Really good. Oh, well. 713-780-ESPN. Have you seen
Timmy put that picture of T.O. walking out there on the Cowboy star, which, again, that was a good 49ers team. T.O. was a good player. Didn't bother me then.
You don't like the Cowboys either, though.
I don't like the 49ers either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, but I think you dislike the Cowboys more. But, yeah. 713-780-ESPN is your number. Did you see the early odds from RJ?
I did not.
Here's some numbers. The spread opened at Carolina 3.5. We now know it's moved to 4.5, and some places we're hearing 6. As usual, early professional money on Denver, early recreational money on Carolina, which is usually the case in these situations. Money line, Broncos 100 will win you 150.
Ooh, okay.
Panthers 170 will win you 100.
So plus 150 and minus 170. I don't know if I don't. I'm not greedy, Fred. You know me. When it comes to betting, if I can get points, I take points.
Yeah, generally I do too. I don't mind minus 110 to get points.
Yeah, there are times when I will, and I did it yesterday. In fact, on both games, I supplement my bet with points with like maybe a half unit or a quarter unit on a money line. But my big plays are always going to be, especially if I'm playing dogs, will always be with points.
Well, there are a couple of times where, especially in college football, I don't do this in the NFL a ton, where there's a significant underdog that I think is way undervalued and has a chance to win. And I mean, and the most memorable one that I can think of was when Hawaii or SMU was playing Nevada in that bowl game in Hawaii, and Nevada was like a 15-point favorite, and I money-lined SMU for a bunch. Right. I like doing that sometimes in games like that where I think, you know, especially in bowl games where I can find an angle. But for the most part, I'll take the points 99.9% of the time. So here you go. Here's a reason why. This is why I like RJ's notes, because they'll make you think about it. When you're first looking at it, you say, okay, I'm going to just pounce on the Panthers because they looked so good yesterday. NFL teams, after scoring 40-plus points in the playoffs, Care to guess what they are against the spread in their next 28 times it's happened?
I know it's not good. I know teams that score a lot of points in their next game, they're usually flat.
Well, and they're usually over favored because of that.
Yes.
How about this? The last 28 times it's happened, 5-23 against the spread.
Ooh.
In their next playoff game. And if you bet preseason, you got the Broncos at 10-1. There were only five teams that were shorter than they were. Here's Seattle, makes sense. Green Bay makes sense. This is preseason, right?
Right.
New England, Indianapolis, Philadelphia was shorter than them. And the Panthers were 60-1. There were only nine teams in the league that were bigger long shots in Carolina. So, anyway, RJ sent that stuff out earlier today, so I thought it was worth revisiting a little bit. Apparently, an estimated $10 billion is projected to be bet on the Super Bowl worldwide. Oof. And he says, over half of adult Americans are expected to have some money at risk on the game. Less than 1% of the total amount bet globally is expected to be wagered legally in Nevada.
That's about right.
Yeah, So anyway, just wanted to share those things with you guys. Let's try Mike. What's up, Mike?
Sports.
Sports to you.
Got a question for you regarding betting. You mentioned the betting line versus the recreational line. What is the difference? I'm new to betting.
What he was saying was recreational money versus professional money, which means that guys walking by the sports book at the MGM while they're on their honeymoons or while they're on their bachelor party weekends are stopping by and they're dropping money on Carolina. The guys who bet sports for a living, the professional bettors in Vegas, the big dogs are putting their money on Denver.
Yeah, and as far as the money line and all that stuff, great explanation of that in that wonderful audiobook, An Introduction to Sports Betting Blitz Style by Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman.
Right.
Available at podcastarena.com, available at galmediapublishing.com. And I love it when I get a call like that because it allows me to go ahead and just promote
to plug
that.
Your book.
Yeah, our book.
Our book.
Not just my book.
Our book, that's right.
If I were going to plug my book, I'd say get a copy of Acing Racing before you go to the track. Acing right. Racing 2016, also available on the same website, podcastarena.com. Learn everything you want to know about the horses. So, see, then I got to plug both of them. Quick break. It's a Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the Gow Studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, 713-780-ESPN. If you want to get in, grab a couple more phone calls as we move forward here. Barkley on Facebook, trying to get caught up on all our social media today. How cool is it that number one and number two overall picks in the 2010 draft will face off in Super Bowl 50? Actually, it was a 2011 draft, but that is, you've got Cam Newton obviously went first, Von Miller went second.
Yep.
Well, I think when we look back on that draft, it's going to be one of the best ones ever.
It's hard to argue, man. If you just look at the, you can go damn near. Okay, we'll just start with the top 17 picks because I think the top 17 picks are all impactful guys.
And there's
with the exceptions are the three quarterbacks that
right that everybody reached for.
Teams reached for. Jacksonville reached for, or excuse me, Tennessee reached for Jake Locker.
Could have had Tyron Smith.
Jacksonville reached for Blaine Gabbert.
Could have had J.J. Watt right behind him.
And the Vikings reached for Christian Ponder.
Could have had Robert Quinn or Mike Pouncey.
Cam Newton, Von Miller, Marcell Dareus, A.J. Green, Patrick Peterson, Julio Jones, Aldon Smith, who is now a knucklehead but was still a good player.
He was a really good player. He helped him get to a Super Bowl.
Tyron Smith, J.J. Watt, Nick Fairley, Robert Quinn, Mike Pouncey, Ryan Kerrigan, Nate Solder. That's the first – you can even leave Nate Solder off. That's the first half of the first round. And you're not even – Cameron Jordan was in that draft.
Muhammad Wilkerson.
Andy Dalton was in that draft. There's been – Randall Cobb was in that draft. Justin Houston was in that draft. DeMarco Murray.
Darrell Casey.
I mean, there was some players in there.
And
Julius Thomas was in that draft.
You know who else was in that draft?
Richard Sherman.
I mean, that's amazing. And those are some guys who went later. Tyrod Taylor, who may wind up being a decent quarterback for the Bills, went in the sixth round of the Ravens that year.
Jason Kelce, who, according to Josh Innes, is a... No, never mind. Also in that draft, though.
Yeah, he was. He was. So, you know who else was in that draft? Went two picks before Richard Sherman?
Who's that?
T.J. Yates.
Well, there you go.
The Bengal killer, T.J. Yates.
Although Richard Sherman is... And listen, I think Richard Sherman's a really good player. I think if Richard Sherman had gotten drafted by the Texans, he wouldn't be the Richard Sherman that we know.
I think he fits that system that they run there very
perfectly.
Well. Yeah, and they have a certain type of player they look for, and then they develop those guys, and they thrive in that system. I'm not sure. If you took Richard Sherman out of Seattle, I don't know that he's the same player anywhere. I don't know of another team where he would be the same player. You know, maybe Carolina, because he'd be playing opposite of Josh Norman.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think you could say that about a lot of guys there.
Seahawks got, in that particular draft, they got K.J. Wright in the fourth round. They got Richard Sherman in the fifth round and Byron Maxwell in the sixth round.
That's right. That's pretty good production there.
That's a pretty good draft. But yeah, it's a really great draft.
Your Broncos got not just Von Miller, but you mentioned Julius Thomas, who they don't have anymore, but that's a pretty damn good draft that they had, too.
No doubt.
And
I mean, like you said, that's a good draft top to bottom.
Yeah, and I think that's one we're going to look back on and say, pretty damn good.
Yep.
All right, let's squeeze in a couple more calls here. Thomas, you're on the Blitz. Go, sir.
Hey, sports guys.
Sports to you.
So my question is, I specifically remember the both of you kind of going in kind of hard on Cam when he got that humongous contract.
No, that was just me. Fred backed him up.
That is true. I take that back. That is true. Well, my question is, how do you guys feel about the contract now? Was it worth every dime of it, every penny?
Well, if they win a Super Bowl, of course. I mean, he's won an MVP, or he's going to win an MVP. But, yeah, I was clearly wrong.
And all I said is that's a going rate for a quarterback if you think he's your guy.
Yeah, but to be fair, let's talk about what Cam Newton had shown to that point. It wasn't much. I mean, it was flashes at best. And there looked to be a lot of bad with the good. He's one of the few guys, though, who got paid and then had his best season ever to follow that up. Cam Newton's probably wishing he would have done the Joe Flacco thing and said, you guys just wait one more year to pay me. We'll see how this looks next year. Who knows what Cam Newton will be worth now. But, I mean, it's, yeah, obviously I was mistaken. He's the right guy.
Well, and... I just thought that he had accomplished a little more than you had at that point. And I mean, that's just a difference of opinion on it. But it's just like, if you decide Ryan Tannehill is your guy, you have to pay him.
Yeah.
And in that case, I wasn't sure about Tannehill, but
was really dumb too.
But what's your option?
I don't know, but you know what? Now knowing now what you do, if you're Miami, don't you wish you would have figured out another option? Just cut bait and either gotten one of these Brian Hoyer types to fill in till you find your next guy?
Well, and that's always the problem. And that's the thing. That's where you get into that argument of perpetual Hoyer versus you're gambling on something. And the Texans are going to deal with that this year, because they're probably going to draft a guy. And then in 3 years, you're going to have to determine whether or not that's your guy.
Yeah.
But Cam Newton, I would just say, in his third year in the league, they won 12 games. And
yeah.
They made the playoffs the year after that, even though they were 7-8-1, but they won a playoff game. So at that point, I think he's shown enough that you have to make that decision. Okay, is this our guy? Are we going to be able to get somebody better? And if you really add it up, the difference between paying a guy like they paid him versus, okay, we're going to, I mean, do you pull, you say, all right, we're just going to go with Derek Anderson for no money and spend the money elsewhere? I mean, they've done a pretty good job with the cap. So, you know.
But the Dolphins, they have the eighth pick in the draft right now. There's probably a quarterback there that they could at least entertain and consider. But now they don't even really have the option to do that right now.
Yeah. JMCK says, am I the only one who remembers Cam crying and towels on his head every game and he wasn't a leader and now he's Hall of Fame worthy? Well, it's not,
he's not Hall of Fame worthy. But that's a big reason why I didn't like him, because he was showing a lot of that... the
petulance.
Yeah, the crybaby, like, can't, he's a sore loser. And I thought the same things about him that I always thought about Vince Young, is that Vince Young is a front runner. When things are going great for Vince Young, it's all good. He's a happy-go-lucky guy. He's Mr. Happy Guy. But then when things are looking down or aren't rolling the way he expected to, they throw a big crybaby fit. And that's not what leaders do. That's not what grown men do.
No, but I also think with a lot of these guys who've had it easy, I mean, and Vince was always the best player on the field all the way through college.
Until he got to the NFL.
Yeah, and Cam was the same way. Cam was the best player out there. It's when you start getting that adversity for the first time, I think you see, I think this happens with a lot of guys too. Suddenly, that character comes out, and then guys either grow from it or they shrink from it. Yep. And I think Vince shrank from it. I think Cam has grown from it. He has learn to deal with things better. He has learned to be a leader. People can do that. I'm more willing to not quit on people until I know there's no chance of turning them around, which is why when we talked about RG3 as a possibility here, it's like maybe that guy can mature the same way.
Yeah.
And that's why I wouldn't pay him a bunch.
My leash
out.
Is much shorter. I give up on guys.
Yeah. And I tend not to. And
I'm ready
what?
To move on and look
there
for someone
new. There are times when you're 100% right to do it, and there's times when I'm right to do it and 100% wrong about guys. Oh, I'm going to give him one more chance. And then he bleeps me. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. And, speaking of VY, not exactly the best weekend.
Yeah, things
for
aren't going his way right now. Which, by the way, what kind of world are we living in where Vince Young gets arrested in Austin, Texas?
Yeah, that's...
If you can't get hammered and drive around like a fool when you're Vince Young, if you can't do that in Austin, where can you do it? Is it just off limits for him now? He's got to behave?
Has he really fallen so far?
Man.
I would think the... Frankly, if I pulled him over, I'd buy him a drink for winning the national championship. Say, here, I'll follow you home. Here, have this on the way. Thanks a lot. Remember the good old days? Yeah. I'm stunned. Oh, well. Poor Vince. If I'm him, I'm not worried about getting pulled over in Austin.
Well, the arrest report. And listen, I have a BR Thur on Twitter said, here's how. And he sent the arrest warrant for Vince. And he's got a red arrow pointing to Officer Manuel Delgado. And I've always said that there is a beef between the black and the Hispanic, that it runs deep.
Mm.
But I never thought that Vince would be caught up in that world.
All right. We're going to take a very quick break.
Mm. I mean, when you wake up and you see that news, VY arrested for DUI, my first thought was, God, what's that guy doing in College Station? What's he doing in Dallas? You would think Austin is the last place that guy could get arrested. The last place.
It'd be like Manziel in College Station, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Tom Herman in Houston.
Well, but even, it's even different because... Johnny Manziel never won them a championship.
No, but he did win a Heisman. He was a big deal there.
Yeah. It'd be like Tebow in Gainesville.
Yeah. What would he get?
I guarantee you, I bet my year's salary, Tim Tebow never gets a DUI in Gainesville. You know why?
Probably not drinking.
Oh, well, maybe that is something to do.
Yeah, I don't think God lets him drink.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind then.
All right. Quick break. It's a Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
On ESPN 97.5. Live from the Gow Studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.
975.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on the Blitz. Joining us now, wrap-up championship weekend, as he does every week, former Raider cornerback, former UH cornerback, Stanford Routh joins us. Stanford, how you doing, buddy? You might need a microphone.
Oh, yeah, I hit that thing.
Rookie mistake right off the bat.
Fellas, what's going on?
Yeah, that's like you slipped and let the receiver get behind you for a touchdown right off the bat there.
Hey, it happens. Every corner, that's happened to everybody.
So, your thoughts.
It's happened in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you do if you're in a game like that where everything just, once they got down, everything started snowballing, they start pressing, more mistakes. At what point did you see where they said, you know what, we're not coming back from this today?
I think Arizona probably knew that going into halftime. I think that the turning point to me was Patrick Peterson goes, he gets that interception, runs it back, Ted Ginn catches him, and which was basically which saved 7 points in a myriad of ways, because very next play, Carson Palmer goes, drops back, doesn't want to hit Larry Fitzgerald over the middle, tries to go and force it in there, the double coverage, Coleman picks it off, and now Carolina has the ball, and that was a big play for me because it was, I believe, 7-24 at the time, and Arizona scores a touchdown. It's now 14-24, and Arizona might have some momentum, and this might be a whole new game. So that play right there, I think, pretty much solidified it, because it went in a half, and things like that just deflate you as a team. It's already 17-point deficit, and things like that just they take all the wind out of your sail. So I'd probably say that was the moment that I'd probably say Arizona knew that, man, like, we're going to be at home next week.
It's funny because Bruce Arians came out and said, it's not Carson Palmer's fault we lost the game. Somebody was sitting there watching. How much of it was on Carson Palmer yesterday?
I think you can put some of it on Carson Palmer, but they lost as a team. They lost it. Patrick Peterson muffs that punt. I'm seeing Ted Ginn and Philly Brown over here look like Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd, or Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, or any other top tandem of receivers in the NFL right now. So Philly Brown on that big 80-yard catch and run, you see Cam Newton bowling over people. But I'm not surprised that Arizona lost the way they did. I'm not. You got Carolina with that defense. It's all about that front seven. Because if you look at it, Carolina's defense, their secondary has a lot of leftovers, if you want to call them that. Roman Harper got ran up out of New Orleans. Yeah. I thought he couldn't play anymore. Coleman, he hasn't been able to find a home ever since the 2011 Dream Team Philadelphia Eagles fiasco. McClain and Finnegan weren't even on a roster.
Yeah. Aside from Josh
2 months ago. And Josh Norman, fifth-round draft pick 2012.
From Coastal Carolina.
Exactly. yeah. Even him. This is his first year actually starting 16 games and actually playing in all of them. So even he's a little bit of like a afterthought in a lot of people's minds. But when you factor all that together, Arizona, from a receiver standpoint, skill position, they can get after Carolina's secondary. They can. But I do remember thinking before the game, if Carolina makes Arizona one-dimensional, they take that run game away, which they did, because Johnson only had, I think, 60 yards rushing. What that does is now the linebackers, they don't have to worry about the run. Because if you can stop the run with the front four or the front seven, the linebackers now can pay attention to the pass, which means now they can sit back there in that zone. The corners don't have to play man-to-man coverage. And you can go and let everything come to you, sit back there, pick balls off, have fun, eat potato chips, whatever, go to the concession stand. That's why you see the best teams in the league with the best pass defense is Seattle, the way San Fran used to be when Harbaugh was there. It's linebackers that can really drop back into coverage, and it's front four that can stop the run without putting another safety in the box. So I'm not surprised that Carolina did what they did to them.
Yeah. Well, I think the other factor is that Arizona just – they were off.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Fitzgerald dropped more balls in that game than he has all year.
Yeah,
I mean, definitely. That's a crazy statistic, but that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Carson Palmer was missing guys. He was throwing the ball 2 yards over guys' heads on 6-yard passes. Like, little dump-off passes are uncatchable. Well, I mean, you're talking about one of the guys that was the most accurate passers in the league this year was completely off his game. And I wonder if that's a situation where there was just too much pressure on these guys.
I would say pressure literally more so than figuratively.
Right.
Carolina has a way of suffocating you on defense. Yeah. They get after you with that pass rush. Kuechly and Thomas Davis are special. The other guys on that team on the defense, they're not really special. That defense is built around linebackers. With the linebackers and the front seven doing what they do, that makes the secondary look as good as it looks. Because, like I said, when you can stop the run with your front four, the linebackers don't have to worry about sucking in on play action fakes. They don't have to worry about overcommitting. All they can do is just sit back there, get back in their drops, and that in turn right there makes the quarterback become inaccurate, because now you got to throw over the linebacker and down in that soft spot before the safety can come up and pick it off. So, like, things like that, it all goes hand in hand. And Carolina right now is on one of those runs that Seattle had 2 years ago, it looks like, because they're just manhandling everybody.
I also think Kawan Short and Star Luke Dalele, the two defensive tackles. Oh, I mean, those aren't just guys on that defense.
Those
are big time players, and they jam up the front not only for the run. But they collapse and they open things up for pass rushers as well. And they were not only that, they were without Jared Allen, who may have helped them even more yesterday, which is crazy to think about. Well, speaking of the pressure that was on quarterbacks, 25 times Thomas Brady got hit yesterday. 25.
That was brutal. That was brutal.
I said the key to the game for the Broncos was going to be hit Tom Brady. I never would have thought in a million years Tom Brady would have gotten hit 25 times in that game.
I did not think that. New England, I did not think that any player on New England's offensive line was going to allow themselves to be toilet paper the way that they were on Sunday afternoon. Because usually those guys, they put their life on the line for Tom. They block for him. They do everything. They take a beating. And it just seemed like those guys were just allowing – I'm over here watching Von Miller. He's already off the ball, off the line of scrimmage, and the – tackle hasn't even gotten out of his stance yet.
Yeah, that happened a bunch of times.
So it was definitely a great game plan for Denver. They manhandled the offensive line, and they took New England completely out of their game plan. I knew that Denver would get after him a little bit, but I figured with Bill Belichick and Brady and McDaniels and all of them, they would figure out a way to slow down the pass rush of some sort. But the one difference between Denver and Kansas City is Denver has a hellified pass rush just like Kansas City does, but Denver's got some mean, nasty, lock-you-down-in-your-face man-to-man corners, where Kansas City has a little bit more zone corners that they're a little bit more predicated. Their success is a little bit more predicated on the pass rush more so than Denver's guys are, with Chris Harris, Tlaib, Roby, all those boys. So it was definitely a great game plan by Denver. But let me ask both of y'all this. How many people in this city right now are going to be rooting against Denver next week just from the fact
they're hating?
Just because of Kubiak being the head coach over there?
A bunch. And we talked about this in the first hour. I think it's silly. I mean,
that literally is the epitome of the old saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Because he literally just fell into that spot.
Yeah, and that's a great spot with a team that was already built.
Exactly. And last year at Baltimore, he was offensive coordinator. He came out and said when Chicago was looking at him for being a possible head coach for the interview, he said he was okay with Baltimore. He's going to stay where he's at. Then all of a sudden, John Fox gets released, whatever you want to call it, and they come calling, and he's like, John Harbaugh, hey, man, I'm up out of here.
All right, you know what, I wish him the best of luck. I mean, I like the guy. I think he did his time here. It was time for him to go. Sometimes you just have to, you have to make a change. And I think he might have lasted longer here than he should have. But hey, it's a great spot for him to be in. And
great spot.
If they win a Super Bowl, then good for him. I don't think that's going to, lift him into the echelon of great coaches in the NFL, even if they win a Super Bowl. But
oh no, definitely not. I know what you mean on that one.
But it's still, I don't know why people would root against him. It's just, he got fired. It's not like, and the fans wanted him fired. So okay, he goes on to do something better. What's the problem?
I agree.
That's like if you dump your girlfriend, and then she goes and eventually marries somebody better than you. Well, that's, you know, you dumped her. You didn't want her anymore.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, but you still never want to see your ex just completely upgrade over you.
No, of course. Fred doesn't care.
I don't care. Because
but Fred
I'm arrogant enough to think there is no upgrade over me.
I like that. Fred like that.
Fred knows every man is an upgrade over him, so he's not going to fight.
Uh-huh.
But all in all, it was definitely some great games yesterday. But the Carolina, I don't know what the hell that they're on over there in Charlotte, but they are embarrassing people. And I'm talking about in the playoffs. Usually, you see what Kansas City did to Houston, and we all know Houston winning the AFC South. Maybe they should have been there, maybe they shouldn't, but Carolina's doing this to teams that are certifiably good.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's so definitely going to be interesting.
Your thoughts as of today, how do you think the Super Bowl is going to go?
Man, I've thought about this already 10 times, and I just don't know. I don't know. I want to say Denver because Denver's got a defense that's going to be able to bottle up Carolina, but I also thought Seattle was going to be able to bottle up Carolina. I thought Arizona's receivers going to be able to get after Carolina's secondary because they're going to be able to run the ball, and Carolina was going to be able to make Arizona one-dimensional, and they were going to force Carolina to actually play some sound, honest defense. But, man, I don't know. The way Carolina's playing on offense, it just seems like they have such an unorthodox way of scoring because they're the highest scoring team in the league. They got such an unorthodox way of doing it with Cam Newton in the pistol, two backs behind him, and that read option. And it makes it so difficult because you don't know who he's giving it to. He might just keep it himself. He might just play action fake it, throw it across the middle to Greg Olsen or Philly Brown or Ted Ginn, or he might just give the reverse to Ted Ginn. They get to have so many different ways of pretty much doing the same thing because it's all pretty much a run play or it's going to be some play action fake over the middle. But they have so many different ways, and they're so creative with how they do it. I could see them getting after Denver's defense because it seems like they force defenses not to be able to play their conventional way of doing it that they've done it all season.
All right, that's Stanford Rout, former Raider, former UH cornerback, joins us every Monday to talk about the NFL. We only got a couple more of these left, man.
Yeah, a couple more.
We're not going to break down the Pro Bowl next week, just so you know.
Oh, of course not.
All right, we're going to take a very quick break. Be right back. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
And we are back on the Blitz. This Saturday is the richest race day in Texas. Join me at the special 5 p.m. post time in the ESPN section. We'll play the handicapping contest, and you could win a dinner for four in the Winner's Circle restaurant. Don't miss the guaranteed all stakes pick four starting at 6. Watch, wager, and win at the park with ESPN 97.5. I think that's race 6, actually. But come on out. Those are going to be hard tickets to get. We will be giving some away. And it's going to be a great night of racing. This will be the best night of thoroughbred racing of the entire year. We'll also be out there Friday for 50-cent beer night, $1.50 wine, watch, and wager, and win at the park with ESPN 97.5. All right, let's do a Zadeye Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The Gem of the Day. It's the gem of the day, the Zadeye Jeweler gem of the day.
All right, I try not to make fun of people's faith. I might poke fun at certain beliefs, but, you know, you believe what you believe, right?
All right.
Sometimes there's things, though, that I just kind of shake my head and say, really? And here's one of them. Saudi Arabia's highest religious cleric... I think the term cleric is pretty cool, too. If I were going to be a religious dude, I'd want to be a cleric, good. Yeah. But he has declared chess to be forbidden for Muslims because the game shows enmity and hatred. It says the game of chess is a waste of time and an opportunity to squander money. It causes enmity and hatred between people. And so it's not illegal, but, you know, his statement goes kind of a long way with people that, okay, basically, this is, you're not supposed to do it. Apparently, he did this about a month ago, but The Saudi Chess Association has put great efforts in chess popularity and will continue holding events everywhere unless forced otherwise. Chess, enmity and hatred. Did he watch that movie with the Russian guy and Bobby Fischer? Is that what it was? Is that what caused it?
I think that's what it was.
Anyway, it's caused quite the discussion in Saudi Arabia. Apparently, they've previously tried to ban all-you-can-eat buffets, Pokemon, and the building of snowmen.
I think we should ban all those things here.
I'm all for banning all-you-can-eat buffets.
Except in Vegas.
Yeah, that's fine, because you're supposed to do it there, right? I'm okay with banning Pokemon.
Yeah?
And, you know, there's no need to ban snowmen here. We don't have them. But they are a little creepy, especially when they get that carrot nose going.
Yeah.
Creeps me out just a little bit.
I don't think we need it.
Anyway, that's your Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The Gem of the Day. It's the Gem of the Day. The Zadok Jeweler Gem of the Day.
Enmity and hatred. All right, let's squeeze in a couple calls here before we get to the top. We'll get Rookie to lead it off. What's up, Rookie?
Sports.
Sports to you.
Y'all kind of touched on it a little bit ago with your guest there. With Kubiak leaving and Phillips leaving Texas and going up there and having a winning season and making it all the way to the Super Bowl, how much influence does the general manager have, and does the draft play on that? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I think in Denver, John Elway has a huge influence.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my thing with Kubiak when he was here. He was always better with somebody looking over his shoulder as opposed to trying to work with Rick Smith as on an equal footing thing. He kind of needs somebody to say, all right, no, you're not doing this. You know, and they finally started doing things like that when they hired Wade Phillips, for instance. Basically, the owner said, look, you're going to have to go get a real defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And he was successful when they did things like that. In Baltimore, he was successful because he had Harbaugh standing over his shoulder. And I think here he's got John Elway standing over his shoulder. And if that's what you take to be successful, that's great. You just need to have that person who can do it. And I think that's what it is. Sid Bream, you know what else causes enmity and hatred between people? Religion. All right, one more. Ben. Ben, you are on the Blitz. Go, sir.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing sports.
Cool. Yeah, I was just, I had a kind of a random question whenever y'all were talking about Vince Young getting in trouble in Austin, and shot just kind of occurred to me because I don't personally think that UT is the best football job in the country. I mean, obviously it's definitely one of the best, but I don't think it is the best. But just out of a random question, do you guys think that if Vince Young didn't win those back-to-back Rose Bowls, one being a national championship, that Texas would still be considered the best football college coaching job in the country?
No, because if they hadn't won that, then it would be, I mean, we'd be looking at 45 years since their last national championship, and that's too long to be considered that. What Vince's run did was show that you can still win big at Texas, and which you should be able to. I mean, when you think about it, it's not just the University of Texas. The state of Texas as a whole is not winning championships, you know, over the last 40 years. With that one exception, it's just not happening. But I think that kind of reinvigorated the idea that of what Texas football could really be if it's at its best. Right now, it doesn't even sniff that. But I don't know if it's the best job in the country. I always say, to me, you could throw Texas, USC, and Florida into a bag and shake them up. And
I think Ohio State, Michigan, LSU, those schools all in the conversation as well.
I'll put Ohio State in there. I'll probably put – I mean, now you kind of have to put Alabama in there. But you're just in such a fertile recruiting ground. You're the biggest school. Historically, those programs have had the most success in their state. It's just you're set up with every opportunity to do it, and I think it's kind of ironic that those three schools in particular, Texas, Florida, and USC, over the last several years have severely underperformed.
Well, I think with any of these programs like this, if you look at them historically, they'll go dormant for a while, every single one of them. And what Alabama's doing right now is one of those stretches that rarely happens. And at some point, if Saban leaves or they'll start having a couple down years, they'll go dormant for a while until they get the right guy back in there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Texas has the right guy, and I think next year we find out. And if he gets that thing turned around and gets them close to what they were and could get them to that next level, then maybe they've got the right guy and they can be that again. Yeah. But it is so much of it's cyclical, especially with programs like that. But you know those teams can always come back. Florida can be great again. Texas can be great again. I'll throw Tennessee in there. Tennessee had that long stretch, and they're kind of forgotten right now, but that's a program that can be great again.
And it's kind of on the rise.
Yeah, yeah. So, but as far as what the best job, so much of that's personal choice, too, for a coach. I mean, I think those are the most appealing jobs because they are historical.
It's personal choice for a coach. It's also, I mean, it's personal preference for recruits. And I've said before, Ohio State and Michigan are still, they're still great jobs. But if Ohio State's program was located in South Florida, it'd be an even better job. If Michigan was located in Texas, it'd be an even better job. It's just harder, I think, to get kids up there, top level athletes up there. But the fact, I also think that the fact that they're able to is really a credit to the coaches that they've had up. Well, the coach that Michigan has now.
Right.
And the last two coaches that Ohio State has had.
But I think those kind of coaches get whatever kids they need, and yes, we've seen that, and they get them from all over the place.
But Urban Meyer could go to Penn State and win a championship in 5 years, I believe.
Yeah, I agree.
Nick Saban, there's very few guys like that. And that right now, I'd say it's probably Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, and maybe Jim Harbaugh could go to damn near any D1 program and in 5 years have them competing for a championship. Power five. I shouldn't say D1. They can't go to Rice and win a championship, but they could go to.
Yeah, Rice would be impossible, but I bet you they could go to a non-power five and put together a playoff team. Any one of those guys.
Urban Meyer's done it.
Yeah. So, all right, guys, I got to tell you about my good friends at Quick Weight Loss Center. And if you've been thinking about losing weight, you had all those New Year's resolutions and you've already kind of ignored those and said, you know what, I'll get around to it. Well, if you keep waiting, when you do get around to it, it's going to be even harder. And listen, I've been getting these Facebook memories from 3 years ago, and I see those pictures. I go, oh, my God, I hate how I looked. And that all changed. And I wanted to get the weight off so I could start working out again. And whatever your motivation is, maybe you just want better clothes. Maybe you just want to get healthier. Maybe you're just tired of the way you look in those pictures. Well, the great thing about Quick Weight Loss, no exercise required. You're going to get the weight off. I got 50 pounds off, and I've kept it off. And they've been helping a whole bunch of people, not just me. For 28 years now, they've been helping people in Houston. And you're going to lose more weight faster and easier, up to 100 pounds or more. There's no prepackaged meals. This week only, Friends and Family Week, you get half off of full programs. You bring a friend, family member, or come alone and get half off. Kids join free with parent enrollment. Some conditions apply. That's this week only, half off full programs only at the Q. Stop by one of their 15 Houston locations. And hey, guess what? If you're over in Beaumont, Golden Triangle area, even Lake Charles, just visit quickweightlosscenter.com. They have a home program. They can help you as well. For your free, no-obligation consultation, give them a call, 1-888-305-1117. That's 1-888-305-1117. Quick Weight Loss Center, 1-888-305-1117. Gotta catch 'em all.
Yeah! This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.